Minded how powerful the words that we speak are. You realize, like, what you say is huge. In large part, it'll determine how you think, and how you think will seep down into your heart. And from your heart, I mean, it's that circular aspect of what is in your heart so often comes through your mind. What's in your mind will come down into your heart. You speak it out, and you don't realize what you're speaking. And people that are told over and over, you're no good, you're stupid, you're worthless, you'll never amount to anything, you're nothing but a failure, they begin to believe that. You realize this is just practical life. There's a huge spiritual aspect to it as well, because if you're saying something, it's a thought sometime at some point. You can say things stupidly and go, I don't know where that came from. Let me tell you where it came from. It came from your heart. How was your heart affected? Because something entered your mind and you dwelled on it, and then it seeped down into your heart and then you spoke it out. The words that we speak are huge indicators of what's going on inside of us. But here's the deal. You can control the words that you speak, yes, and that's important. There have been many times that I've been bit my tongue, and it has served me well. There's been a lot of times where I did not bite my tongue, and it bit me in the behind. Y'all know exactly what I'm talking about, because many of you have probably dealt with that exact same thing. The words that we speak will many times create the environment in which you live. And if you think that's not true, go home tonight, and the person that you live with say, you stupid and ugly, and see how that works out for you, because it's going to change the environment in which you walk into. If the first thing you say when you come home and you're married and you say to your spouse, you're an idiot, you don't think that's going to change the environment that you walk into? Will it?
Yes.
Of course it will. And I was just reminded how powerful our words are and how important it is that we put truth into our heart and our life, and that, man, this song, God, I Look to You, so powerful, just this proclamation, God, I will look to you. I won't be overwhelmed. Sometimes we have to tell ourselves what is true, that when I look to you, God, I'm not overwhelmed. How many of you have felt overwhelmed before? You felt that way. And isn't it easy just to go, I just don't know what to do. It's just be like everything's happening all at once. And just to give into that, don't do that. God, I look to you. I won't be overwhelmed. Give me a vision to see things like you do. Do we pray practical prayers that are still prayers of adoration to God? God, obviously, I know you see it all. Help me to see it the way you do. I'm looking to you. You're where my help comes from. Not in the form of a check, not in the form of someone showing up to help you out. God is where our help comes from. Sometimes that God will send the check. Sometimes God will send the person, but it's still from him. Give me wisdom. You know just what to do. And then, so powerful and practical, I will love you, Lord, with all my strength. When we feel weak, it is easy just to go, God, we are still to love God with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength. And when we say it, I'll love you, Lord, with all my strength. I'll love you, Lord, my shield. I will love you, Lord, my rock. Forever, all of my days, I will love you, God. Let me just tell you, when you've been at your worst, when you've been in a bad place, sometimes it may be hard to actually sing these songs, because it says, forever, all my days, I will love you. And the enemy's there to remind you of yesterday when you didn't. But can I tell you, it is so powerful when you make a statement saying, Lord, you know my heart. I will love you all of my days. God, you reign. That line, forever, all my days, I will love you, God. Have you ever just felt like, man, today's terrible and feels like just giving up? Anybody felt that? We've all felt that way before at some point. We need to remind ourselves of truth. And this was not on the script for me at all, but I really believe that there's some people that this applies to, that monitor your words. If you look at yourself and hate yourself, you can't do that. And I think it kind of ties into my message, but a little bit later, particularly the aspect of what we say about ourselves, what we say about our situations, because that's not at all where I'm going with tonight's message. It's kind of more like a teaching, and so it's going to require some participation. Are y'all willing to participate? Okay, part of this I pulled from what we do in Next Steps. So if you've been through Next Steps, and a bunch of you have, you'll get it. It's old hat, so play along and give me some good answers. There's not necessarily a wrong answer. There's no stupid answers to this, really. Just stupid people, so let's be smart. That's not true either. There really isn't. So I've got my marker out. I'm ready to go. I titled the message. It's not even, it's kind of what the church should be. What should we be? And then kind of I hopefully give us some answers as to how we can practically apply that to us individually. So when we ask the question, or when you make the statement, what should the church be, obviously there's always the, well, what is it not? Like, what's the problem? And so in a society where Christians are rapidly and quickly being viewed through the lens of fanatical bigots, it wasn't that way 40 years ago. It wasn't that way at all. To call someone a Christian was a compliment. I don't remember that. Because as long as I've been alive, I've only heard people who are outside of the church use the term Christian in a derogatory, cynical way. Oh, you're a Christian. And now it's equated with intolerance, with ignorance, with bigotry, quickly becoming connected to hate crimes. It's messed up. Why do people say that stuff? And why do young people leave the church in droves? And why do people who actually consider themselves faithful, regular church members only come about once a month? Do y'all know that? 48% of people come once. I'm faithful, regular, every Sunday. It turns out they actually come once a month. I think that's comical. Anyway, why do people not want to go to churches? And why would your friends not want to go to a church? Why would they not want to be around church people? Okay, so we got fake. Can I put this? I'm going to put this in the light so y'all can see this. So they think that Christians and people that are Christians are what? Fake. Okay, what else? Why wouldn't they? Judgmental, that's a good one. Judgmental. Look, y'all can't comment on either my spelling or my handwriting. They're both terrible. The spelling probably more so. Did I spell that right? Judge. There's a G in there somewhere. I don't know where it is. I'm a terrible speller. Thank you. Y'all are judging me on judgmental. Why do people dislike Christians? Why do they don't want to go to a church regardless of what it's like? Why? Their perception is what? They're fake. They're judgmental. What else? What? Some hypocritical. Okay. Hypocritical. Y'all leave me alone. I can read like nobody's business. I can't spell to save my life, but what else? Weird. Okay, yeah. I don't know how to spell weird. W-E or W-I, I can never get it right. E-I-R-D, is that it? I before E except after C. I have to think about it. It takes too long. What else? Why don't people want to come to a church? Okay, no different than the world. Hypocritical, okay, it's power. So let me distill some of this out. So no power. So it may be like, what's the point? Point? What's the point? Ooh, that's a good one. Beer, somebody said beer. I have yet to go to this church. Fear. Okay. Hold on. Money hungry. Okay. Fear. Fear of what? Fear of what? Okay. Fear of that. Fear of what else? Why are people afraid to go to church? Fear. Okay. So that would be like, maybe, like, they know, like, they're running from God, and they know. Okay, why else? What fears? Okay, that's stepping away from fear, but that's a good one. Feel unworthy. Okay, I'm going to put that under running for God. Okay, have y'all had bad church experiences? Okay, and what was it that made you like dislike that, or that experience was not good? Weird, hypocritical. Okay, judgmental. Okay, like awkward. How about like left out? Okay, no love. weird pressure, like pressure, yeah. Okay, to pressure to be, like to join, that's like pressure to join. Like, you either belong or you don't. It was kind of my, like, it's like you need to do this. Okay, I like that word better. That makes sense. Who said it? Control? Would that work? Like controlling? There's a, okay. I don't know how you put that on the board though. Like no truth. Like okay, bad church experiences. Now think about it from somebody who's never been. They don't. That. That's a great word. I don't know if it's actually a word. I use it though. Religiosity. Which is what? Ritualistic, yeah. Okay. Fake, judgmental, hypocritical, weird. What's the point? Money hungry, fear, all sorts of things. I don't feel worthy. I could be left out. No loan. No love, Todd. Love. No love. Yeah, that's bad stuff. So now we're going to erase all of this. You want to be a part of a church like that, like any that has any of these attributes, do you? No. So I want you to imagine the best place ever that you could ever fathom, the best church that you could ever be a part of, and tell me what it's like. Compassionate. Compassionate. Welcoming. How about, let's do this, artistic. Slash beauty. Maybe, I don't know. Music. Decor. Nobody wants to go to a nasty place, do you? I don't want to go to somebody's home and like they know that I'm coming and then, you know, there's like cockroaches everywhere. Can I tell y'all a story once of what happened? I think I've told this before. I did not tell this recently. I shouldn't tell that story. I should? Man, I got this call. I was children's pastor, and I was in my probably mid-20s, and I got this call that this kid was contemplating suicide or something, and it was out on Portage Road. If y'all know where Portage Road is, I feel sorry for you. It is way out along the levee, in between St. Martinville and the levee. It's on the way to the levee. I don't know if y'all have ever been out there. The whole place has a dark cloud on it. That is some crazy stuff, and like the accents are... They're so tall, they talk like that, you can barely understand. You're from there, aren't you? Are you from there? No? No? Yes? No? Okay. You're shaking your head like, yeah, I know. I was like, you kind of look like him. But, it's a different place. And so I pull into this yard thing. And, man, it was bad. I mean, it was bad. And I walk into the house and I talk to the mom and the dad they speak English. But it's very difficult to understand. And it is the filthiest place I've ever been in my entire life. And I've been in some really, really, really nasty, nasty places. Grew up going to other people's hunting lodges and out in the marsh, like where you have to, some nasty, nasty places. This is the grossest place I've ever been. And I'm talking to the mom and the dad, and I kind of got my hand on the counter. And there are like roaches crawling everywhere, like hundreds and hundreds of roaches. And like I'm just trying to play it cool, but on the inside, I'm a neat freak. And I'm like, roaches all over the place. And then one crawls like right up on my hand. I'm like, just nonchalantly like, yeah. Uh-huh. And the mama reaches over and smashes that thing and kills it right in front of me. I'm like, and she just kind of does like that. I was ready to go. It was bad. I think there's something to be said for a nice, neat, clean place. If I'm going to go to a church, I want it to be nice and neat and clean. Compassionate, welcoming, artistic. It's beautiful. Music, decor. That's it. I get it. Okay. What else? The church you'd walk into and go, man, this is unbelievable. It's welcoming. It's compassionate. It's artistic. There's a lot of other things I bet you can think of. Come on. We're wasting time here. We got to go. Authentic, accepting. What does that mean? Okay, let's put that. Feel like can belong. Got it. Okay. Makes sense. Biblical. Boy, that's a good one, isn't it? Yeah, right now we could be walking into Aeropostale. Biblical. Pretty important, wouldn't you think? Biblical. In other words, it's a church lined out that Jesus talked about. That's a good one. That's a big one. I'm going to go just say that's important. Very. Probably foundational. Maybe it should be up here. I'm just saying. Okay. What else? Okay. You can say, I'm going to put sense love of God. How do you sense the love of God, by the way? Okay. You can feel it. There's a sense. Okay. But what practically? Tell me what that's like. Okay, I'm hearing people. Okay, that's true. You can sense the love of God. I think that's pretty true. Yeah, and people and actions. That's a good one. Okay, what else? What else? We've got to keep going. Give me a bunch. Come on. It's what? Supportive. Supportive. Well, that's good. What are they supportive of? Okay. Well, sure, but I'm just thinking, are they supportive of, there's all sorts of political agendas you could support as well. So, connective, is that what you're saying? Connective. In other words, people can connect. They're reaching out to build friendship, to build a bridge. Connective. Okay. Anything else? Fruitful. Yes, two people at the same time couldn't even hear each other. Fruitful. We could hear you back there, sir, but he didn't hear you. I said it the same. Good deal. He said it like, and then, fruitful. Did I spell that right? That's not right. Thank you. I told you, I'm not the best speller. Can read a novel a day, I can't spell. Real. Ooh, I like that. It's kind of authentic, but it's a little twist, particularly when you say transparent. Yeah, I like that. Freedom. Freedom to worship the way you want. So, but then you get into all sorts of stuff. Then you define what is worship. Is it music? Is it? I know what you mean. Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm just saying the reason why I'm not going to go into it in depth because you open all sorts of stuff. Freedom. Fun. Well, thank you. I like fun. Y'all like fun? Giving. I like that one. Someone said boring. What? Growing. Yeah, like it's growing. Okay, cool. I like it. Yeah, I'm going to add three things that I think a church should be. Is that okay? I can put mine up there. I'm going to say a church really should be kind of like a family, but a healthy one where people do all of these things, all of this. I think we got part of it. I think it's a place to belong. We said that in accepting. You have to qualify that as well, because here's what I firmly believe. You can accept anyone, but you don't have to agree with everyone. There's a difference. And this is probably the biggest for me. These are huge. Both of these are really big. All of these are really great. It's awesome. And just for me, it's a place. Did I spell that right? Encouraged. Man! Is that not spelled right? Okay, I feel the need to let you know my reading comprehension score on the ACT, because it was good, okay? I'm just saying. Did I spell it? Ed. It's all this pressure. Ad. Is that it? Thank you. I'm really not a dummy. I really feel like I should tell you what I made on my reading comprehension. But when I mentioned my math score, then people just say my reading comprehension. They're like, oh, and then you go math, and they're like, oh. Family, place to belong, encourage, a place where we're encouraged. So whose responsibility is this? Whose is it? Let me just remind you, that we define what our church is like. I think there's one that's not up there that's probably, when I put it, you'll be like, oh yeah! You ready? I can spell it too. How about just friendly? The number one common denominator of people saying, man, I really like it here. And let me tell you why. Because within their first 30 seconds of being here, somebody shook their hand and said hello. Almost always. The church that God has called us to be, I believe, is all of these. But we all have to take responsibility for it. But I got three things that I want. We're going to do this lightning fast. You ready? Because I asked the question, what can we do? Because truth be told, I think we're pretty good on all this stuff. Do I think that God's called us to even greater things? Of course. Yes, he has. God's calling us to even greater. But let me just tell you, I think we're doing a pretty good job on this. But what can we individually in our own personal lives do? Because that's where it begins. Like, you can put on the face and you can be friendly. You can whip out your wallet and you can buy somebody lunch. You can give in an offering. You can be giving. You can have fun. You can say, man, there's freedom. All of these things that we can individually do externally. Except maybe this. Maybe this. No, you can do that too. But what can we do inside? And I want to look at a contrasting view of two people, Saul and David, and how they led the nation that God had given them, and their victories and their mistakes. And the next part of this message was really birthed out of me working at a church, just coming on with a church, and I was driving to a men's Bible study that I was going to be leading with just a few guys in St. Martinville early in the morning for a 6 a.m. Bible study. I was driving from my house in Broussard to St. Martinville, and I did not want to go. I was tired, and I did not feel like going to St. Martinville. And I'm like, I just don't want to go. God, I just really don't feel like going. I don't want to do this right now. And God spoke to me. Three things, very simple. Number one, and this is the biggest one, what can we do? We can understand what we're called to. Everyone here has a calling. There is a calling that Jesus is calling out to you. You can be like, oh, I never heard it. I didn't sense anything in my heart. Let me just tell you, there's some callings that you don't have to sense. There are some callings that Jesus wrote down, is spoken, is written. It's written. Apparently my grammar is messed up. It's written in the Bible. To go to do what? To go and make disciples. To go, I must understand what I'm called to. And this is what God spoke to me. He's like, you're called to people. Here's what we're called to. First, God. Then others. We are called to people. It grieves me when I've heard people in ministry say, man, the ministry would be great if it wasn't for the people. I'm like, you're dumb. God's called us to that. I want you to have an understanding that God has called you to people. When we look at Saul, who was called by God, anointed by God to be the leader of the nation, on the very day that he was to be brought before everyone and crowned king, this is what happened. 1 Samuel 10:21, it says, Then he brought each family of the tribe of Benjamin before the Lord, and the family of the Matrites was chosen, and finally Saul, son of Kish, was chosen from among them, but when they looked for him, he had disappeared. He was hiding. Many people hide from the call that God has on their life to reach other people. God's called you to people. Are you answering that call and reaching outside of yourself? And if you think that a handshake and a smile and a welcome that says hello doesn't make a huge difference, it does. And let me just tell you, not in just the church context. When you reach outside of yourself and you welcome someone, you love on someone, and you're doing it from a heart of, man, I want them to see the light of God in my life, they will. And when you begin to couple that with encouragement and that sense of belonging, like they can just be a part of it, that transparency in you because there's nothing to hide. Am I making sense here? What can we do? Man, we want to have the most awesome church ever. We want to see people come to know Christ. We want to see lives transformed. We have to recognize we're called to people. Then we have to step out and go. David's revelation, which for me, as I read this years and years ago, was so huge. You know, God anointed him as king. Ultimately, Saul messes it up. From the get-go, he was kind of a train wreck. When he was going to be brought before everyone, he hides. He messes it up. Ultimately, David is his replacement, and he's the second king. And as he sits on the throne, I mean, he's, wow, he's an amazing leader and an amazing man. And he had this huge revelation, 2 Samuel 5, verse 12. David realized that the Lord had confirmed him as king over Israel and had blessed his kingdom for the sake of his people, Israel. When you come to the revelation that the blessings that God has given you are not even really for you, that's humbling. Man, I'm blessed. I'm so blessed. And to be in the position that God's placed me in, I'm humbled. And I better remind myself, it's not about me. I would imagine that everyone here can think of blessings in your life, right? You enjoy them? Health, family, the ability to drive here, healthy enough to walk here. That's God's blessings. They are for you, but I think there's a strong argument that can be made that they're not even primarily for you. Confirmed him over king, blessed his kingdom, David realized it was for the sake of the people of Israel. I am freezing cold up here. My hands are turning to icicles. Can we turn that down? Thank you. Everybody, you see that, Taylor? Everybody looking. So y'all can turn it to where it's not so cold. Thank you. Literally, like, there's crystals on the inside of the glass here. Apparently some floaties, too. The second thing. What can we do? We can understand what we're called to, people. The second thing is we can understand our influence. All of us have more influence than we recognize. I'm telling you, you influence more people than you realize. Do you know that? And you'll influence people one way or the other. May you choose to be intentional in influencing people to serve God, to stand tall, to recognize who they are, that God doesn't make junk, that he has a heart for them, that he has a plan for them. But Saul didn't do that. Saul issued multiple times foolish orders. And God specifically spoke to him in one situation and said, listen, kill. In this battle, you need to kill all the animals too. When y'all win, put, I don't want any, like nothing. There's nothing. But he keeps some of the best livestock. And this is the exchange that happens between the prophet of God, Samuel, and Saul. 1 Samuel 15, 22 and 23. It says, Samuel replied, what's more pleasing to the Lord, your burnt offerings and your sacrifices or your obedience to his voice? Listen, obedience is better than sacrifice. Submission is better than offering the fat of rams. Rebellion is as sinful as witchcraft, and stubbornness as bad as worshiping idols. So because you've rejected the command of the Lord, he's rejected you as king. When you choose your way and you choose selfishness over serving God and serving others, your influence affects others in a tremendous capacity. But when, like David, at the cave of Adullam, at your worst, you realize God's still at his best. Boy, that somebody needs to write that down because it's so true. Even at our worst, God's still at his best. And David, conversely, Saul led a bunch of people astray. But David got what was considered the worst of all people. David was outcast, hunted by Saul because Saul saw that God's hand was on David and he was out, and Saul was out to kill him because he knew that David was going to be king. And so David hides out in this cave. I'm going to read 1 Samuel 22, 1 and 2. So David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. Soon his brothers and all his other relatives joined him there. Then others began coming. men who were in trouble or in debt, who were just discontented, until David was the captain of about 400 men. This is David's beginning in leadership. He's got to run from a king who's trying to kill him because Saul thinks that David is going to end up on the throne, which ends up being true. And so David goes and hides in this cave, and then everybody who's in trouble, everybody who owes other people money, everybody who's just discontented with life, they show up at his doorstep, and there's 400 of them. I'm just asking you this question practically. If you were on the run because somebody was trying to kill you, and you had to hide out, and you found a place to hide out, and then everybody that was in trouble, people were looking for them because they were in debt, they owed money, or they were just generally complaining, discontented people. If they surrounded, if they came to you, would you be happy with that? Y'all ever been around people that got issues, and all they do is complain and moan and whine? Is that fun? You ever been around people who are in debt and they know the bill collector's calling? Is that person fun to be around? No, because they're constantly what, and then phone calls. Y'all know what I'm talking about, right? You want to be around those people? That's who David ends up around. But he recognizes that he has influence, and he becomes intentional in it. Are you a source of encouragement? How did, because let me just tell you what happens. All of those people who were troubled, in debt, discontented, they become David's strongest men. They become an army. How does that happen? David was able to see the good in them and believe the best for them. Had to have. No other way. Do you do that? Can I just challenge you? If you can't see the good in you, is there bad in you? Question, is there? Yes. Is there good? Yes. When you look at other people that you know God's called you to, God's placed around you, or he's called, maybe it's your family. In a healthy family, wouldn't you hope that mom and dad view the kids, even though they may be messed up, through the lens of what they can be and their good attributes rather than their failures and their flaws? You ever had somebody look at you through the lens of failures, your failures and your flaws? Have you? How's that feel? What's it like? Doesn't it feel like you can't do nothing right, everything you mess it up? Feels like this, doesn't it? Oh, we erased it, thank goodness. Judgmental. But have you ever been around people, maybe you have had a healthy family, or you've been around some people who are healthy, and every time they look at you and speak to you, guess what they focus on? The areas where God's gifted you. The areas where you have something positive to focus on. The areas that they know that you can win in. And maybe it's an area you don't even see yourself. How does that make you feel when somebody puts their finger on something that you haven't really even seen, but maybe you can see there's a shred of hope and truth there, and that you, does that empower you to change? Has anybody experienced that before from someone? Man, not enough of y'all. Really? Nobody's ever been able to look at you and see something and go, I think there's something great there. If you focus on the negative faults and flaws on yourself, how can you not do it on other people? Man, David had to be an unbelievable influencer. Intentionally, how did he do it? I think he just encouraged. Understand your influence. Do y'all remember when what it feels like to receive a compliment? Abraham Lincoln said, everybody loves a compliment. Isn't it true? Do y'all dislike compliments if they're sincere? If they're sincere, you like it, don't you? Yes. Let me just tell you a great way you can influence people, sincerely compliment them. Let me remind you, What can I do? Man, I want to see this happen in my life. I want to see a church that's awesome. I want to see, God, you do something fantastic in my family. God, I'm called first to you, then to others. Secondly, I have influence. Y'all say that with me. I have influence. The last thing, and it's huge, and we're wrapping up right now. Understand the power of our peers. Understand the power of our peers. Who you surround yourself with will determine your destiny. My dad told me that over and over and over. Son, birds of a feather flock together. Who you surround yourself with will determine your destiny. I think there's a tremendous amount of truth in that. Understand the power of our peers. Can I just remind you that David made the men around him? I'm just going to read. They're not going to be on the screen. These are the names of David's mightiest warriors. There was first Jehoashabim, who was the leader of the three mightiest warriors among David's men. He once used his spear to kill 800 enemy warriors in a single battle. I find that impressive. Next in rank was Eleazar. Eleazar and David stood together against the Philistines when the entire Israelite army had fled. He killed Philistines until his hand was too tired to lift his sword, and the Lord gave him a great victory that day. Wow. Next was Shammah, son of Agi from Harar. One time the Philistines gathered at Lehi and attacked the Israelites in a field full of lentils. The Israelites fled, but Shammah held his ground in the middle of the field and beat back the Philistines. The Lord brought about a great victory. Once during the harvest, when David was at the cave of Adullam, the Philistine army was camped in the valley of Rephaim. The three, who were among the 30 of David's strongest men, an elite group among David's fighting men, went down to meet him there. Where were they? At the cave of what? Of what? Adullam. Somehow, these hurt, wounded, troubled, in debt, discontented men became strong warriors. The Philistine army was camped there, and David was staying at the stronghold, and a Philistine detachment had occupied the town. David remarked longingly to his men, "Man, I'd love some of that good water from the well by Bethlehem." Three of them broke out through the lines, drew some water by the gate in Bethlehem, and brought it back to David. And it goes on and on to talk about all of these exploits of these men who had been with David at the cave of Adullam. Which should, by most logical people's thinking, would be the cave of Adullam was a place of rejection because the king, though God had spoken and said David was going to be the next king, the current king was trying to kill him. But instead of focusing on the negative around him, David just said, God, I'm called to you and I'm called to people. He understood his influence and he understood the power of the people around him. Some of you are David's. You need to recognize that regardless of where you are, God has called you to be an influencer, and you are someone that God will use to bring people into the fullness of what they can be. Some dude killed 800 people in one battle, but he came to David, obviously, beat down, hating life. What happened? David encouraged him. David saw something in him, spoke to it, turned his heart towards the Lord. Are you that person? Some of you are Davids. And some of you are people who need Davids. And in truth, all of us are kind of both. What can we do? What can we do? God, I'm called to people. God, I will be intentional in influencing others. Lord, I will be careful about those who I surround myself with. Who's around me? God, I'll speak life into them and let them speak life into me. Be very careful. Because who you surround yourself with will determine your destiny. My prayer is that we recognize we're responsible for the environment that we live in. We're responsible for the environment of our home. We're responsible for that sphere, that environment around us at work. You may not be responsible for the whole thing, but you sure are responsible for what happens right around you. We are responsible for our family, for our work. for our home. We're responsible for this house. I know y'all want to see that, don't you? I want to see that in your home. I want to see that in your workplace. And I sure as heck want to see it here. And I'm just telling you, thousands and thousands will come. They'll flock, just like they did to David. Why? Because God's at work. Because our first calling is to Him and then to others. Does it make any sense to anybody? Y'all get anything out of it?
Good.
Let's be who God's called us to be. And let me just tell you, God's called us to be great. He actually says that. Jesus said to His followers, He said, "You're already clean because of the words that I've spoken to you." I cannot pontificate upon that. All I can do is wonder. What in the world? I'm telling you, if you've never surrendered, like truly surrendered your life to Jesus, you don't mind missing it. We think, how could I ever be good? Well, I can't, my own strength. But let me tell you, the moment that I realize, oh my goodness, Jesus really is like the Son of God, and his death brings my life. He died for my sins, and His blood washes me clean. Then it's not so much about what I have done or what I'm unable to do or what I try to do. Then it's just, it's already been done. If you've never surrendered your life to Jesus, that's where it begins. May we be full of His Spirit. Let's stand. Father, I pray tonight, You fill us with Your Spirit. You fill us with Your presence. And that, Lord, that, Father, I just pray right now that if there's any area of sin in us, You point it out. Turn from it. Surrender to You. Father, may You fill us with Your Spirit. May You fill this house with Your Spirit. Lord, may You use us to see people come to know You. In Jesus' name, amen. Love you. God bless. Talk to y'all soon. Sunday's going to be great. You know, I'm telling you, you don't want to miss it. And we're starting a series on...